And we are going to hear from Missy Booker, who is going to tell us that nothing is impossible.
Good morning. Thank you for staying. I appreciate it. I'm a little bit nervous, so I appreciate your time this morning. I'm here to share with everybody today a presentation about Bill Nunn, and I'm having some issues with my William G. Nunn, who was the worked for the Pittsburgh Courier, so I'm very excited to share information about William Nunn in his hometown of Pittsburgh. A little bit of background about me. I'm a member of Sabre's Northwest chapter. I really focus on the person behind the statistic, and I'm interested in knowing more about the person. As much as I love statistics, there has to be a person to throw the ball and catch the ball and field the ball. I'm fascinated by Leroy Satchel Paige. He's kind of my guiding light for all of my research projects. And so the question is, how did I end up researching William G. Nunn Sr.? I was actually looking at some information about Jackie Robinson, and I came across an article about Bill Nunn that Bill Nunn had written. And I read one, and before I knew it, I had read 300 more. So he has become a big part of my life the last couple years. So I refer to him as a Renaissance man for a couple reasons. He was a journalist by trade, but he was really a civil rights activist. He fought for baseball integration, armed forces integration, housing integration. He was a community leader and a family man, and he did all things well, which is really hard to do. He grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the Homewood area. He was born on January 4th, 1900. He attended Westinghouse High School. He was the school's first black football player, and he also played baseball. And I love this photo. This is actually from the Pittsburgh Press on December 16th, 1917. And there you see a photo of William, I call him Bill Nunn, over here on the right side. He also played baseball on this date, on June 10th, 1917, according to the Pittsburgh Press. He played first base, and he did not get he had a couple of walks and a couple of stolen bases. After high school, after a short stint working in the post office, he took a job working for the Pittsburgh Courier. He would spend from 1919 to 1963 with the Courier. That's a very long and impressive career. He started as a reporter. He transitioned to a columnist. He eventually became sports editor, managing editor, and became a board member, and really played a key role with the publishers, the Van family, of connecting with them, and was just a driving force for that organization. I love this photo of him. That's actually him from 1946 with Jesse Van, the publisher. The smile on his face, I think, is a perfect example of what the type of person that he was, and you can see his love for his work. His first column from a baseball perspective was called Diamond Dope, and it came out May 30th, 1925. Prior to this, he was a general assignment reporter, and he had a real unique style of writing. It was kind of flowery, it was very positive, you could feel his passion in his writing, and he often used first person, which in today's journalism seems so different. But he got his first baseball column, Diamond Dope, on May 30th, 1925. Part of that was because there was a relationship with Cumberland Posey from the Homestead Grays working for the paper, and the Courier was very involved with baseball in Pittsburgh. He focused heavily on the Grays. He focused a lot on Central Baseball Park in Pittsburgh. He also was really good at player analysis, which will come into play later in my presentation, and also player promotion. For example, when he talked about Vic Harris of the Homestead Grays, he said, "He's a local boy, though few realize it. Vic has played with Cleveland and Chicago, Rube Foster's club. He is a sure fielder, and his bat plays a merry tune." So you can see that he had kind of a way with words. From a player promotion standpoint, he really did believe that regardless of your skin color, that anybody could play. If you had the skill set, you could play Major League Baseball. And here, the Harrisburg Telegraph called out that Nunn believed that Oscar Charleston was a Hall of Famer. And here's what Nunn said about Oscar Charleston, the great, great ball player. Charleston not only has the speed of a Carey, the arm of a Musial, the brains of a McGraw, and the hitting ability of a Hornsby, but he is a singer of rare ability, a writer of parts, a billiard player of more than ordinary skill, and a happily married man. So you can see his way with words. After Satchel Paige tossed a no-hitter on July 4th, 1934, he said, "He not only stamped himself as the greatest showman in the game, but proved conclusively to close to 10,000 fans assembled that he ranks with the greatest in the country." So he had a real way of words, did a really good job of promoting players based on their skill set. He also partnered with Ira Lewis and Wendell Smith of the Pittsburgh Courier for baseball integration. He believed in it both morally and professionally. Certainly, Ira Lewis and Wendell Smith have the majority of the promotion from that. People know them. But behind the scenes, Nunn was covering Negro League games. He was writing features on Negro League players. He was also interviewing Major League executives to get a feel for, could integration really happen? So he was working behind the scenes. He always focused on talent. He was a part of the tryouts that were set up by the Courier for Jackie Robinson, Sam Jethro, and Johnny Wright. He also was the secretary for, the Negro National League as well. So he was this diverse man. He, along with Roy Sparrow, Cum Posey, Robert Cole, and Gus Greenlee, he came up with the idea for the East-West Classic for the Negro League All-Stars. The first game was played September 10th, 1933. And for Nunn, he referred to it as a diamond epic. The excitement of the game, he would get very excited. And when you read articles written by him after each classic, there were a lot of exclamation points. And I find that just very humorous, that his excitement and his joy over what he was covering. Nunn actually had a little bit of a controversy in 1947 after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And this is the article that first introduced me to him. He wrote a column about the integration, and the title is, "Let's Take It in Stride." And a lot of people were very offended. They wanted to sell a black newspaper with a distribution of almost 400,000, and here he is saying, "Let's take this in stride." And what he said is he was thrilled for Robinson, but he wanted integration to happen in other parts of life as well. He also called out that Jackie Robinson had a job to do, and that job was playing baseball. And so if we're constantly celebrating him, he's going to have a hard time doing his job. Let's let him go to work like the rest of us go to work. Took a little bit of flack from that. And it was interesting because he was a very beloved columnist. And so it was interesting that that's what caused some challenges for him. As a sports editor and as a managing editor, he was very, very protective of his staff. He was known as a mentor, a leader, a guide. And I think there's no better example than when he reached out to the Pittsburgh Baseball Writers Association of America in 1950. He wanted access to Forbes Field press box for two reasons. The first one was for weekly papers, and his reasoning was his staff is supported by the same newspaper guild as daily papers, so why can't they be in there? Also, their salaries were comparable. In addition, he felt that there were very many talented black writers that should be able to be in that press box as well. That did happen. What I love about this letter that he wrote is that he says it's going to take time, and he didn't expect things to just happen overnight, but he was willing to work with people, and I think that's a really good example of the type of person that Nunn was. While he is known for his time at the Pittsburgh Courier, one of the biggest things he did at the Courier happened in 1935. He established a relationship with Joe Lewis, along with Chester Washington, another reporter for the Courier. They did really what was one of the first exposés, first features. And they did this in-depth feature about Lewis, his life as a person, as a boxer. The interesting thing that happened was what I think is the most telling story of Bill Nunn, is that he became Joe Lewis's confidant, his friend. And so it was almost like when Lewis talked about the press, he thought of Bill Nunn. In fact, in 1951, when he came back for his last fight, Joe Lewis said he would only speak to Bill Nunn Sr. And he said, "Fighting is my business." That was the famous line, and it was given to Bill Nunn. While he was working for baseball integration and sports integration in general, he also was working for armed forces integration. The Pittsburgh Courier, which was the most prominent black newspaper at the time and very influential, had a program called the Double V Campaign. It's a double victory campaign. And it came from a cartoon, a letter that was written to the newspaper. A gentleman asked, a guy from Omaha, Kansas, said, I'm not Omaha, from Kansas, reached out and said, "Why would I fight overseas for democracy abroad if I don't have it in the United States?" And so the Courier, along with their cartoonist, created the Double V campaign for victory abroad as well as democracy here in the United States. William Nunn was a huge champion of this process, and it led him to support war correspondents, led him to cover the Nuremberg trial. It also led him to covering overseas how black armed forces members were being treated. He really wanted that integration to go well, and I really believe he's kind of an unknown hero in that whole process. For the Brown versus Board of Education effort, he led a campaign to raise $17,000, which in the 1950s is a lot of money, and so he was able to help Thurgood Marshall with that. He also fought for housing here in Pittsburgh. He led an effort to develop 124 affordable housing units for both blacks and whites. And so his whole thing was about making people better. He was a fascinating individual in that he was connected all over Pittsburgh. He was a member of the Lowendy Club, a famous social club for blacks in the Pittsburgh area. He was on their board of directors. Here's a picture of him. He's over here on the left side from 1956 at one of their meetings. He was a key part of that club as far as their charity events, as far as hosting. Lena Horne came. Her father had a connection to the club. But he was just always involved. He also played a key role with the Center Avenue YMCA here in Pittsburgh in making sure that not only were they developing athletic programs for kids, but working with housing locally. He was always involved in their planning efforts, and it passed on to his family as well. He passed away November 14th, 1969, after a long illness, and I would also say that he passed away of a broken heart as well. His wife, Mabel, had passed away just a couple months earlier, and they'd been married for over 50 years. I love this quote from the Pittsburgh Courier. "Nunn had a personal hand in helping to aid the careers of hundreds of theatrical stars and musical aggregations, sports figures, church figures, national political greats, and civil rights figures." So he really was this Renaissance man that touched many parts of the black community. He had a son, William G. Nunn Jr., also known to many people as Bill Nunn, which is why I keep mixing the names, and I apologize. He was born September 30th, 1924, in Pittsburgh. Just as William Nunn Sr.'s career was just starting, he passed away in May of 2014. Just like his father, he attended Westinghouse High School, and he went to West Virginia State and played baseball, basketball, did not follow in his father's footsteps in that respect. Played basketball at Westinghouse as well as West Virginia State. And here's a picture of him. And he's up in third row, third one on the right, tall, lanky guy. While at West Virginia State, he was on a team that went 26-0. He had a chance to go play for the Harlem Globetrotters after college. However, he decided to follow in his father's footsteps. And he took journalism over basketball. And he went to work for the Courier. Much like his dad, he started out his career as a sports reporter. And then he eventually became managing editor of the paper. What's interesting is he is most known for, during his time at the Courier, for the Courier Black All-American football team. And he's known for his ability to do player analysis and in-depth features. This led him to be very well known for this. He was really the source of the best college black football players in the country. Ironically, in 1925, another nun started the Courier Black All-America football team. So he definitely came by it naturally. As a Cleveland Browns fan, I am sorry to tell you that in 1967, Mr. Rooney asked Bill Nunn Jr. to work for the Steelers and start doing some scouting for them. He started in 1967 part-time, joined the team in 1970 full-time, and he was a part of six Super Bowl champions and played a key role in players such as L.C. Greenwood, Ernie Holmes, and John Stallworth, Donnie Shell, joining the Steelers. So big impact. And one of the things he often commented in his later years was that he looked at white players as well. For him, it was just really about the talent. And I like to think that he got that from his dad. So he had a son, William G. Nunn III, but many of you might know him as Bill Nunn, which is confusing because his dad, when this gentleman decided to be Bill Nunn, decided he was Bill Nunn Sr. So a little bit of confusion on the junior-senior path there. He was born October 20th, 1953. Sadly, he just passed a couple of years ago. He went to Morehouse, and he did not take the path of his father or his grandfather. He became an actor. While in college, he met a gentleman by the name of Spike Lee and did some notable films such as Do the Right Thing, School Days, Regarding Henry, Sister Act, and Spider-Man. He also, much like his father and his grandfather, was a huge community leader here in Pittsburgh. And there's over 1,000 young people that have earned scholarships based on Bill Nunn's efforts. So really, for me, I found this whole family to be really fascinating that from this legacy that happened with this family. And when I was kind of thinking about what is the impact of William Nunn Sr., I went to the statement from George F. Brown, who was a newspaper man after he died, and he said, "Whose dreaming usually ends with a concrete accomplishment." And I think that the thing about the Nunn family, you can say, is when they put their minds to do something, they did it. Whether it was supporting the integration of baseball, whether it was helping with armed forces integration, whether it was a community effort, if somebody in the Nunn family said they were going to do something, it was done. And again, there's that photo from 1946 that I just love of his smile. Lastly, two things. I talk about keep pulling the string. I had an email exchange with John Thorne about when you're doing research, how when you find one thing and you just keep pulling, you're unraveling the string on a sweater. So I encourage everybody to keep pulling the string because you never know what you'll find. And lastly, some thank yous. So thank you for the opportunity to present. Did I put you to sleep before lunch? Yes. He was truly a doer, an organizer. And what's really interesting, there's not a lot of information out there about him, but when you start looking at the things that he did, he was really good at pulling people together and letting somebody else shine. In fact, for the East-West All-Star Game, many have said it was his idea, but they said that they've accredited Sparrow with it. I think he just was not comfortable with the limelight. He was really about building up others. No. In fact, there's a great, my favorite column, art news article that he wrote was actually in 1924 about trying to establish a young teenage girls basketball team. And in 1 week's issue, he said there were tryouts. And the next issue, he said, not everybody came. Like, he wanted more people. And then the third week, he said, we did it. And he was really credited like four people that got the group together. And so he was really good at calling out what others did. He made others look great, at least in my opinion. Go ahead. So he talks in one of his columns, one of his Diamond Dope columns, he actually comments about what a great writer Wendell Smith was. And you can tell there's a true respect level between the two of them. And really, all the reporters across there, one of the things when he passed away, the feedback from other newspaper, both at the Courier and other papers, he was very much about growing journalists and supporting them in any way, even if he might have disagreed with them on a topic. Sure.
Hi, Missy.
Hi.
Do you know anything about whether or not the 124 units were successful in terms of being an integrated community?
They were, and that was the big part of it. I should have gone into more detail. And that actually stemmed from his relationship with the Center Avenue YMCA. And there was two parts to call out about that. One was not only that it was integration across black and white, but there were females that were purchasing, single females finding housing as well. So it was across the board. And so I think it was he tried to get involved with other programs like that, but as he got older, got into more bigger projects.
What year was that housing project built?
1952, I believe, and started was the effort, and it completed in 54.
And what percentage of Pittsburgh was non-white at the time? Like, what was the...
You know, I don't know that answer. Okay. I apologize. But thank you for the question. Any other questions? You're probably all ready for the banquet. Thank you.